This is Wilp's Wake Up Call, but we're having to change our name. We have been on for the last couple of years on Friday mornings from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, and we are so tickled pink to have this new time slot. So mark your calendars, 5 to 6 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. But since we don't want to call it anymore Wilp's Wake Up Call, we are announcing a contest. We need a new name. First, let me just mention that WILP, W-I-L-P-F, stands for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and affectionately known as WILP. So we are inviting all our listeners to be thinking of a snazzy new name. This might be for people going driving home from work at this time period, cooking supper. We leave it up to your imagination and creativity. If you have any suggestions to help us out, please leave a message for me, Lori Hoyt, at 968-1888, 968-1888. Lori Hoyt, and just give me your ideas or the name. We haven't thought of a prize yet, but maybe one of the prizes we're talking about is that you can get on the radio show and have 5 minutes to get your message out to the world. But today, in our initial exciting 15 minutes, excuse me. Tana Hartman, our co-host, and Dick Paddock is our engineer, and she said we should give anybody who wins this contest 15 minutes to get your thoughts and ideas out for your favorite issue and concern. For this, our initial one-hour show, we are so happy and so pleased to have an old friend, Chris Moran, here from the Interfaith Council, and he has brought with him two other friends of his. One is Rainey Holman, Rainey Norwood, who is a co-worker for 20, how many?
Rainey has worked for nearly 25 years at the community shelter, yes.
Wow, Rainey. And also another friend, Jay, who is a former resident at the shelter, because we're going to be talking today about poverty, about hunger, about what it's like to be homeless, and try to fit in all of the above. So maybe we'll have to do it. Maybe an hour won't be long enough. So, Chris, let's start with you. See, I'm ready to say good morning again. Good afternoon. And maybe we could start off just letting people who may not know what IFC is, and just a little bit about you and your mission.
We're really glad to be here, so thank you for inviting us for this debut show in the afternoon. The Interfaith Council has been with us nearly 50 years. We were founded many moons ago, 1963, by seven women who believed that people should be fed. They were very upset that people were hungry, and in a very wealthy community, people were not being taken care of. And since that time, we have evolved in so many ways, where today we do a variety of different things. We have two homeless facilities, Community House, which is downtown, which is the subject of a lot of conversation in the community right now because we're going to relocate that facility. Home Start, which opened in 1998 for women and children. I think a lot of your listeners might remember that we housed women, children, and men at the Community House for many years until that happened. And we have a facility in Carrboro, which is a community service operation that provides food for people that live in households, nearly 3,000 households right now from Carrboro and Chapel Hill. And we provide crisis intervention services, advocacy, and community education. We also have medical clinics, which I forgot to mention, at both of our homeless facilities, which we're happy to talk about if you wish.
Wow. So you do a full range of social services for people who are struggling financially and also for those who don't have a home at this point in their lives.
That's correct.
And you just mentioned an astonishing figure of 3,000 families come to the food pantry in Carrboro, if I heard you right.
That has gone up significantly in the last couple of years, that number. And when the economy got to be really bad for so many individuals, jobs were lost, there were foreclosures, there were lots of things happening in neighborhoods all across this community, those numbers rose significantly. People came in, they needed food. They weren't earning enough in order to pay their mortgage or pay their rent, pay their utilities, put gas in their car. They were making choices all the time what to do first every month. And I think it grew like 148%, something like that.
In the last few years.
Yeah, and it's just a huge number. And what I want listeners to understand is that these are individuals who could become homeless. And there may be a paycheck away or an experience away or a health crisis away from that happening to them. So it's not just about those who are homeless, it's about those who could be homeless.
Yeah.
Because we seem to think that people who are homeless all the time or repeatedly, and that's not the norm.
So that as our safety net has gotten shredded by the government, the IFC, the Interfaith Council, has tried to come in and provide a safety net to this community. And I think that might be a shock to a lot of people who think of this as a very prosperous, if not elite, university town community. And I think for some people who have not been maybe paying attention or have not been here that long, or we get busy with our own lives, are not aware of how much poverty that there is in Orange County. And I know it was a shock to me some years ago when I got some statistics. And part of that we were talking about before the show, Chris Rainey, about that there's not that much business here. The university is the main employer.
Which does not pay taxes.
Which does not pay taxes.
That's an important point. It's
yes, it is.
28,000 students living mostly off campus, not on campus. We're talking about an institution that doesn't pay taxes for its development, where others are required to do that. And just imagine for a moment if we had a huge company that was, and how much money that would bring to the community. Now, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just simply saying that that's part of the problem, that there needs to be I'm from Michigan, and Ann Arbor has a better mix of blue-collar jobs and university jobs than we do here. If I remember right, Ford Motor Company is right outside of Saline, or close to Ann Arbor. And so people had the opportunity to work in a variety of different jobs, not just a service economy situation. If you're working at the university in housekeeping, you're not going to become a full professor. You can't jump like that. Where in a Ford Motor Company, you can become a foreman and earn more money. And we all know that the automobile industry is suffering too, but it seems to be coming back in some places in Michigan.
So your experience was in another college town, and that just being a college town does not mean one can't also have business. And this
And we all went to Madison, Wisconsin a few years ago, and what struck me there is that you had a lot of, you didn't have big company businesses on the streets of Madison. You had mom and pop businesses that were homegrown there. There was not a storefront empty. And you could walk on campus and it seemed seamless. It seemed like there was a better integration of the university and the town. And I think the university actually, the arrangement there, they were paying something back to the town for the opportunity to be there other than tax.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. So this might be a subject for another whole show.
You're not going to have a problem with an hour.
Chris is referring to the fact that I was a little anxious starting our first hour show. Okay, so the Interfaith Council is providing this safety net and helping to keep more people from becoming homeless. And Rainey, you've been working at the community house, the shelter downtown, for
25 years.
Yes. Yeah. And now they're one of the controversies, or it's a controversy to some people, we all think it's a good idea, is that the community house is in an old facility. It used to be the police department, mm-hmm. right? And kind of falling apart, and there's hopes and plans to have a new community house out on Martin Luther King Boulevard. Do you want to talk about that?
I think we can all chime in on that.
Yeah.
The University of North Carolina gave us a gift of 1.66 acres, which is an incredible thing. And there hasn't been a lot of press about that, and there should be.
Yeah.
And
we get mad at the university, but that's a real good.
Well, I was just talking about the reality of the economy.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I get mad at the university.
But the university has made this an extraordinary gift.
Yeah.
In an area that is properly zoned for a shelter.
Great.
Quote unquote shelter as the town would define it. So. We're in a place where we're close to services. There is incredible public transportation. There is a Southern Human Services Center. There is health care. There are jobs. There are all kinds of opportunity. And it's close to our Homestar facility that currently serves women and children.
And it's on the bus line. You maybe already mentioned
it. It is the most important bus line now in Chapel Hill and on the town's planning. What they're planning is that corridor all the way to Hillsborough is going to be really popping, so to speak, in a number of years.
Great. So you get this gift. There's plans to want to build a new and beautiful community house. And so what's the controversy?
I think the controversy is about who homeless people are. And from our perspective, we want to provide the best location and the best program for people that deserve those accommodations and want to work on goals and objectives so that they can become independent and be reassimilated back into the community.
So that the community house, it sounds like you have a definite program, Chris, in mind. It would not be just a shelter. Not that shelter isn't important, but this would be what?
We need to talk about that, because there's a difference between emergency shelter and transitional housing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about providing 52 beds
mm-hmm.
where men can actually start at a place and then move up, earn the opportunity to move to a four-room or four-bedroom, then to a double, and then out. So they start at a certain place, and every time they move up, they improve their accommodation based upon the work that they've done.
So they'd start out in a kind of a dormitory setting, and
correct.
Then if they were meeting
mm-hmm.
certain goals and responsibilities, they
yeah.
would then be in a bedroom. It was a shared bedroom with four instead of a whole big dormitory.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I understood?
And they're going to have to be sober.
Yes.
Which is a very different philosophy for us. In an emergency shelter, it's not a matter of being sober or not sober. It's a matter of behaving and coming in and going to bed and getting a shower and getting a meal and getting services of various kinds.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a transitional program, you're really earning the opportunity based upon the time that we want to spend with 52 people at a time. And as long as it takes for them to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
We think it can be a disruption if someone, even if they're not addicted, is drinking versus someone who is addicted and is in one, or is in recovery and is in one of those beds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a change for us. We never used to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very different.
What brought that about?
I think we really had to think about it. We've been to the Healing Place. I think Jay and Rainey went.
Yes.
We can talk about that, which is a recovering facility. And I mean, my experience over the years has been that when we've tried to do recovery programs mixed with other residents who are not in recovery, it never works.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a recovery program, but it's a program where everyone is going to have to do some, they're going to have to commit themselves to something very different if they want to be independent again. Where emergency shelters, the obligation of an agency is to bring people in off the street so they'll be safe. And what we're planning is something more than safety.
Okay, so this is really a whole change in how you've been doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess probably the whole shelter and homeless around the country, I imagine that there's things that are being learned and there's an evolving
Well, everywhere we've gone and studied and looked at is different. Every organization has a different philosophy.
Okay.
Depending upon what people do. Some people want to serve only women, some want to serve men, some mm-hmm. want to serve kids.
Mm-hmm.
There are all different kinds of programs, and that's true of kitchens and pantries. Mm-hmm. We never saw anywhere combined programs with kitchens and pantries. That's unusual, what we're going to be doing. People either want to specialize in a food pantry or a kitchen or a soup kitchen
mm-hmm.
or a particular model.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying, and this goes back to your words about safety net, we're only going to do this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the community has to figure out what it's going to do about the other needs that still exist.
Okay,
because the safety net is gone.
Okay, let me back up a minute because I think you moved into the other place you're talking about building. And that is the kitchen has been downtown in the same building where the emergency shelter has been.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about a new community house, which would be working on the 52 beds, people working
only, yes,
only working 52 beds only, working on transitioning
mm-hmm.
into independence. But then you're also talking about another building in Carrboro.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to make sure our listeners have
all of the food programs will be moved to one location.
Yes, yeah, so we have a pantry in Carrboro now and a kitchen on the corner.
And people who go to the kitchen don't necessarily use the pantry.
Uh-huh.
And people who use the pantry don't necessarily go to the kitchen.
Right.
And we see the kitchen being an expansion of the pantry.
Okay.
Which means that there's all this food that's thrown away or wasted.
Yeah.
So all the food comes to one place. People can get hot meals. They can get groceries. They can get both.
Okay.
And we'll be open from 9 to 7 every day, but Saturday and Sunday we'll do one meal on Saturday, one meal on Sunday. We do 3 meals every day now.
Yes,
but what's changing is that most of the people that eat breakfast are people who are residents or have been homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so the breakfast program will continue at the new facility with volunteers, with the infrastructure that now exists. But in Carrboro, we'll only do the noon and evening meal.
Okay, noon and evening meal. So, Rainey, what part of this are you working in? You're working at the community house now?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. are you working with the emergency shelter and the kitchen?
Yes. When we bring them in as a resident,
mm-hmm.
you know, we provide, you know, hot meals for them. At the same time, at the community house that is staying there, people can walk in off the street, get hot meals, we've been doing that for
More than almost 30 years.
Right.
Right. So they can walk in off the street and have a bed and a hot meal.
Yes, but now we will say that when you come in, you want to be, we got a waiting list because we got a lot of homeless people out there.
Yeah.
You know, so we do sort of a small screening up there. And then we do what we call it now, an intake on there. We take information then. When we got beds and room available, we take these people in. At the same time, these people that are trying to get a job, instead we like to send them out with a hot meal and a hot breakfast. And sometimes if they're working over at the university or something, they can walk over and get a meal at noontime. And in the evening, we We got a lot of family that come down and have dinner with us.
So you're well used, but it sounds like that there's increasing pressure that more people need help than you're able to provide at times. Sometimes you can just take their name down. You don't have a space for them. Did I understand that right?
Right, and you know, I understand you. You know, I listen to you. You were pressure. You know, Chris didn't get the pressure. We just do the job. I mean, the job is not. they deal with the numbers and stuff. You know.
Yeah.
Rain in person. Don't pay that no attention, you know. I mean, I just, when it comes to the door, it can be 10, it can be 50, you know.
You keep calm. You just keep piling on and taking care of people.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a station break now. And when we come back, we have the other guest, Jay, that would like to talk to you a little bit, Jay, about your experience. But our station break, let me find it. We have an underwriter that we're very proud of, the Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street. And this is another longtime community institution that has been serving this community through volunteers and through love. It's a small bookstore, but it's also a community resource center. You can walk into the Internationalist and find out about at least a lot of progressive things that are going on around town. You can probably find out things about the IFC. You can find out things about all kinds of meetings. People just back from trips to Colombia or Nicaragua. So it's well worth your time to stop in. And if you're too busy to do that, you can find out more information by going to internationalistbooks.org. And while we're giving, I forgot to say at the beginning, have your pen and pencil and paper ready, because we always give you some numbers and ways to get more information about whatever topic we're talking about. And again, this new program, new one-hour show, is being brought to you by WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And you can go to our website, trianglewilf.org. Which I hope you will do. And we have tapes of a lot of our previous radio shows that you can link to. Okay, I want to come back now to our guest. We're talking about the Interfaith Council and its long and proud history of being a safety net to this community, and some very creative ideas and hopes that they are working on to even better serve the community. And one of them is relocating a community house up on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and Chris has been talking about how that will be different from the present. It'll be 52 beds with people working towards transition. And we also have Rainey Norwood here, who's been working at the community kitchen downtown for 25 years. And we also have a former homeless person who we're very delighted to have here too, and his name is Jay. And Jay, welcome.
Thank you.
So maybe do you want to tell us a little bit about your experiences?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a little strange. I was just thinking here. I entered ISA Community House the day after Labor Day, 2008. Mm. And one would necessarily identify that day with my being homeless, but it's a longer process than that. You know, homelessness doesn't happen overnight. It's a thing that, yes, you can see coming, but obviously there are some things that you can't do to stop it. As Chris said earlier, there are a lot of people who are not homeless, but are seeing that shadow.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, IFC was there when, you know, the shadow overtook me. And I'm very glad that they were there. The experience was one of quite differently in my life. One of the things that being homeless or former homeless, however you'd like to term it, is that you begin to see things a little differently. There is, as I see it, there's one definition for all of us who are homeless that just doesn't fit. You know, one. Either we're all druggies, alcoholics, lazy to the hilt, uneducated, unmotivated, and that is not true.
That is not true.
That is not true. There are gentlemen at IFC who have the education that would belittle some of those professors over at UNC. They have skills that you couldn't really pay to have. Yet things happen in life that, mm-hmm. you know, that the big picture that anyone sees is that you're homeless, not what can happen, what could we do, what could I want you to do to help you relieve the situation. And there is, in my opinion, the greatest value of IFC, because the fact that you are, you know, without a home is nothing to them. You know, that's their starting point. And they offer medical, psychological, social work, job coaching, every avenue to cover to provide you a way out. And that's a thing that the rest of the world doesn't offer, a way out. Because, you know, yes, for every facet of society, there are the best and there are the worst. You know, and there are people in between. You know, we have to at least have some options for those who make the choice. They don't make the choices for you. They make them available. They give you an opportunity. And it is up to you. They don't, you know, whatever donations you send to IFC, don't even worry about them going into the pockets of the homeless. They do their job. You know, they make things available so that you, Chapel Hill and other places, will have productive taxpaying citizens at some point. And that, in my estimation, that is the ultimate that happens at IFC. Now, the groundwork is something quite different. I got an opportunity to see how these things come together. And I must say that they are one of the hardest working groups of people to make sure that for us who have nothing, at least have an opportunity. And there's no way that I can thank them enough, or anyone can thank them enough. Fortunately, with their assistance, I have moved myself out of IFC. That happened November 16th, 2009.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I don't make very much money, but that's true of all of us around. But I am, you know, I am homed. And quite proud of it.
Yeah.
And, but the only way that I got there was with what IFC offered. Mm-hmm. I took advantage of the psychological counseling. Mm-hmm. It was quite necessary. Mm-hmm. Be fair to the guys, I really wanted to kill myself, because homelessness is not something that anyone really wants.
No.
It's something that's very difficult to live through. I don't care what your attitude is or how chipper you have been in your life.
Yeah.
You know, when you can't escape yourself, and you know, and every second of the day, gee, boy, you're homeless. You know?
Yeah.
It's a very tough existence to go through. And, you know, to have support, to have encouragement, you know, to view the employment section in the newspaper and see it shrinking every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yet, you know, the basic needs that you have a place to lay your head, you know, a place to wash your clothes, you know, a place to eat. At least, you know, you can start to put your life back together. And without them, you know, I still got a long way to go to get life back together, but without them, I wouldn't be where I am now.
Yeah.
I think you said something. I really like the way you put that, that they give those who have nothing the opportunity. And
yes.
I thought, that is a remarkable way to think of it. Opportunity.
Yes.
The thing that is lacking for so many of our citizens.
Absolutely, you know, because you can live through the toughest circumstances, you can, and get through them if you have faith and an opportunity to make it through the other side. Without
Absolutely.
Those two, you're dead. You know, it may be a while before they throw dirt in your face, but you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to live, and hope and opportunity is the breath of life.
I'd like you to notice what he said. He said, I move myself out.
Yes.
Which is very different than a social service organization saying, well, I can do this for you.
Yeah.
I mean, our philosophy is that, as you were saying, Tanya, it's hopefully providing enough opportunities. And strangely, today I was in a conversation with two new staff persons, one who is Tom Wisnett, who is going to be the project manager to help us with these projects, and another person who's an AmeriCorps member by the name of Rose. And the conversation was about being homeless, that none of us who have never experienced this have a clue. Even us, Rainey and I, who have worked with this population for many, many years, we don't have a clue what it's really about until it happens. And it's been documented. You know, the average age, maybe I said this on your show before, the average age of a homeless person is 9 years old in this country.
Okay.
9 years old.
Yes, I think you did say
and
that.
And that's a changing thing, isn't it?
It is. And think about New York and Detroit
and
all of the foreclosures that occurred of big places, and then families had to move because they were evicted. And this happened in a lot of big cities and smaller ones too, but that's one of the reasons. But we have no idea what it means until it happens. I mean, Jay told me a long time ago, he said, I asked him what was the one thing that made him different than me, and he said, well, you have a key. He said that at dinner one night, and I always remember that, because a key is very important to a homeless person who suddenly is not homeless anymore and can open a door or unlock a door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like what you said about the shadow, too, and how that shadow can overtake you. And I don't remember the exact statistic, but of how many American families are only a couple of paychecks away from disaster.
I think it's less than that these days.
It really is.
Yeah. And you know, these are scary times, and it looked like for a little bit like we might be coming out of it, but it looks now like we're in it for quite a long time, and so
we
your
are.
Organization's all.
And we're not
going to
end it, by the way, as some people claim,
no.
until poverty is addressed as a country and as communities.
Yeah, and this is something that we've shied away from. People say, oh, the economy's improving because look at what Wall Street's improved a little bit, and those numbers
Wall
are
Street
so
has
meaningless.
Nothing to do with it.
Yeah. There's nothing to do with people's lives.
I'd like to interject something.
Yes, please.
Reading David Corton recently, who's written, he wrote When Corporations Rule the World, and he now has a book out, Agenda for a New Economy. But he was quoted in an interview in Yes Magazine recently saying, most of the dysfunctions we're experiencing in society, economic instability, social breakdown, violence, war, environmental destruction, are all the inevitable consequences of an economic system designed to concentrate power and focus social values on money. And the only way we're ever going to fix these things, we're ever going to fix any of it, is if we actually address that problem, this system. It is a system that is broken.
Well, and I think we also we talk about leaving Iraq, but I don't understand why we're back in Afghanistan. And I mean, if that war was over, and if this country decided to pump all that money into ending homelessness, which it wouldn't, but if it did, my heavens, there would be so many resources, so many houses,
yeah,
so many jobs, so many case managers.
Absolutely.
So much medicine, but it's not happening.
Well, even if we didn't pour it all in those directions, certainly a lot of it could go. I mean, it's very hard. This is what happened to Johnson trying to do guns and butter. And Bush started a war that he never asked us to sacrifice for. There never was any raising of taxes, and now we have this huge debt. My goodness, what a
surprise.
Well,
we also have New Orleans, yes, where there was this horrible catastrophe that affected mostly African Americans.
Yes.
In 5 years since then, we haven't done diddly in that. And I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand, yeah, when we don't put money back into, for Americans that are poor, Americans who have suffered from hurricanes, earthquakes, or what have you. And it's like we're bipolar all the time when it comes to tax dollars. I don't get it.
Well, Chris, we are. We live in a society where all the decisions are determined by people who they're concentrating wealth upward. They are focused on, you know, helping the rich stay rich, basically, and in control. You know, helping the rest of us doesn't, and certainly not those who need the most help. I mean, we just aren't a country that looks at our most vulnerable and says, oh, we really need to help them, and we're going to do something about it.
And we've had capitalism for a long time, but the capitalism has even become worse. It's like on steroids. It's like predatory capitalism. We used to have manufacturing, and you said the car industry is coming back a little bit. But right now, the business of America is money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that's what the business is, the handling and turning around and putting it hither and thither and yon and making money each time you make a transaction. But that, again, is going to be another show.
But it's money for investors.
Yes, the large investors.
It's not jobs for ordinary citizens.
But somehow, and that's why with this program and other things, you know, we've somehow got to educate ourselves. And my hope had been that for this economic turndown, for all the suffering that so many people are going through with homes being foreclosed, with losing jobs, that somehow we can start to awaken the soul and conscience of America.
I think that's deliberate too, though. I think all of this that happened at once was done deliberately. Because when it happens that way, there's too much to respond to.
Mm.
And so people give up. And so it's not just about education, it's about having a will to do something about it. And during the last local election, you don't know how many candidates called me and say, what do I say about this? Or how should I talk about homelessness or talk about hunger? And I said, you don't have to talk about our project and where it's going to be. Just talk about that, you know, other than picking up garbage once a week or finding a place for the landfill, you know, start talking about other issues, social economic issues that affect this town.
Mm-hmm.
And put it at, if Edith Wiggins said a long time ago, and maybe I've said this before, when we were all walking out after the naming of Martin Luther King, she said, wait a minute, don't leave yet, I want to tell you folks something. I want you to pay attention to our town budget next year. And if the things that you brought before us tonight are not priority items in the budget, then guess what? We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can say you care about something, but if it doesn't translate into money in a budget, what is it? I mean, we talked about ending homelessness in 10 years, and I keep saying, well, there was a 100 years war, and it lasted longer than 100 years. There's no money that went with that.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how politicians kept signing on to it, liberal and conservative,
yes,
and saying, oh, we support that. Well, what the hell does that mean?
Exactly.
And means
that,
we pay lip service.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, what are they doing to end homelessness? And thank you. I thought maybe I was the only one just missing a beat here. So this is something we should be going to our town council meetings and bringing up.
Well, what we would like.
Tell us what we can do and what our listeners.
We're having an annual meeting on October 21st at the United Church, and we're going to bring out all of our designs, and we're going to tell everybody what they can do to help. And
Say that date again, I'm sorry.
October 21 at the United Church. All of you are invited.
Yes, and this is in the evening?
It's 6 p.m.
6 p.m., yeah. So working people can go.
Everybody brings a dish to pass. The food is fantastic. We did this last year.
Potluck?
And Rainey and Jay, we're all there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, potluck.
And okay, go ahead.
Well, I learned today that there are 10 transportation trips every day from Martin Luther King Boulevard to the new Durham Tech campus. I never knew that. I learned last week that our public parks is prohibited for any of us. We would be trespassed if we went to a public park after sundown, from sundown to sunup. It's against the law. So some neighbors are saying, well, our folks are going to end up in parks. And when I met last week with the assistant chief, I said, now tell me true or false. You patrol parks and public places more than you do private places, because I've been saying that. You're apt to do that. It makes sense to me. If I were a cop, I would do that. And he said, that's absolutely true. So why would homeless people go sleep in a public park? So at this meeting, we're going to hopefully teach everyone that writing lots of emails to the town council members at a time of a public hearing is very effective. Yes. It is getting congregations to get 50% of all congregations to write letters to the town council is very effective. Showing up is great as long as 150 people don't get up and talk, because town council members find that nauseating. So, but if a couple of people get up and say, well, all those who support this project, please stand.
Yes.
It's much, as Justice United does, it's very effective. So emails I learned today, which I didn't think would be effective, are effective. And talking about the fact that when it comes down to coming up with shelter guidelines that the planning board has been asked to do, having public transportation, being near services, being near where healthcare is, being near where jobs are, being near all of these things will help homeless people be successful. So the shelter guidelines should be about what's best for homeless people, not for the IFC, not for neighbors, not for anyone in particular, but for homeless people. Those are the folks that need to be successful.
Can I ask you something? Does the town of Chapel Hill have a budget to donate, to give something monetarily to the IFC and also the town of Carrboro? What do they contribute?
Well,
and the
we get some allocations every year from the county and the two towns, but frankly, our budget is primarily privately funded. Most of the dollars, we have over 3,000 donors, individuals who give to us, and then there are many groups and there are foundations and family funds and so on. But when we lost public money a number of years ago at Homestart, around $350,000, when Congress decided to redirect from transitional housing to permanent housing, we had to make that up with private money to keep that program alive. So I want public money, but I'd rather have the general community supporting us. It's refreshing. You know, if somebody gives $10, that's terrific. If somebody gives $10,000, that's terrific. They're equally important. And so everybody can do something. Or we have $1,800,000 in in-kind services with volunteers, the food that's donated, the space that the town of Chapel Hill now gives us, which is greater than our fiscal budget. So this community is very much engaged with us, mm-hmm. and that's why we're going to be successful. But people need to stand up and be counted, mm-hmm. and they need to write emails, and they need to write letters, and organizations need to support us, congregations need to do it.
And when they write those letters and emails, what is it you want them to tell them?
Why they think
more
that
money?
This project is valuable to the entire community,
okay.
rather than just the IFC or just a particular neighborhood, or it's important for everyone.
Right. If you were to give people a set of talking points,
we will have that already on the 21st. Yep.
Right. That's going to be our organizing meeting.
People need to ask this question: if there were no shelters, What would they prefer? That there be no shelters at all, or to have places where people can come inside? Now, I think there will be chaos on the streets if there were no shelters. People would be outside finding any place they could sleep. And when people are inside our facilities, they're not drinking, they're getting services. They're going to bed, they're in
getting
meetings,
food,
they're
yeah.
getting medical attention. So shelters are not bad places. They're places where people can be safe. And homeless people want to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any disruption at all, we're going to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And the man sitting to my left is an expert in that.
Believe me, he is.
You're talking about Jay.
No. Oh, no.
Well, and the church is...
Rainey K. Norwood is
there. Rainey K. Norwood, our here, our town hero. So
in my book, absolutely.
Yeah. So the churches, now I understand, like, for my church, the churches help out with meals, like each church, or at least some of the churches, like I go to the community church and does a breakfast,
mm-hmm.
lunch, and supper. So when you made that change to... It'll still happen.
Yep.
The churches will still help with...
All volunteers, remember, all volunteers, all food, one place. We're going to provide about 26 parking spaces, 24 or 26. Our architect is Jim Spencer, right over yonder.
Okay.
And how many developers come into town and provide 20-some spaces for parking, which the town can use after we close? Anyone can use.
Oh, that's great.
And a building that could be available to the town, and it's going to be a very attractive and green building. We're going to do everything we can do to make Main Street Main Street.
That sounds...
Not to quote Sinclair Lewis, but that's
That sounds wonderful. And so when is your hope that this would happen? Is this...
Well, it would be tomorrow, but we know that public processes take a couple of years.
Oh, it would be a couple
and,
of years.
And there will have to be a zoning text amendment change for Carborough, because we're being defined as a restaurant, the kitchen, which we're not, but
uh-huh.
that's how it's being looked at currently.
Uh-huh. So I hope that the town is being cooperative, because I live in Carborough, and I'd be happy to...
Well, we expect you to be at every town meeting.
Well, I'll try, and we'll get all of Wilf out there.
There you go.
Before we leave the October 21st,
yes,
the
let's
time
get...
and the address for the United
6 p.m., oh my. It's 13-something, because we're 13, the men's facility will be 1315. But if you go to our website, ifcweb.org, you will see you can actually sign, fill out something, say what dish you're going to bring, and register.
Okay.
And it's a big, beautiful church as you're heading out of town on the left there.
Well, it's the one right at the intersection with Homestead.
Yeah.
Road and, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say something about United Church. They are partners with us in this project.
Okay.
We will be working with them jointly, because we're going to be, our sewer and water is going to come from that property. We're going to access our property from their property. They're going to volunteer with us. We're trying to provide some extra parking spaces for them. Remember that the United Church used to be over on Wilson Court.
Yes.
And the IFC was next door. And they provided that parish house to us for years. Here we are going back again. So it's a pretty remarkable story.
So renewing
in
this
my
long
book.
History.
They're a wonderful congregation. They also host the Transition Carborough Chapel Hill
mm-hmm.
meetings.
Yeah.
And they have unanimously supported our project, all 800 members.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wow.
And then when you move to Carborough, is there a church that's supporting your efforts?
There are only two churches in Carborough.
Uh-huh.
Rebecca McCullough's church, which is now... meeting their church is over, oh gosh, I can't tell you exactly, and Carborough Methodist Church has been very, very supportive. Both, Rebecca's on our board of directors,
Right.
And Carborough Methodist has been extremely supportive.
Right, and there's another one further down, Calvary Baptist, I think.
Is that right in Carborough? So maybe there's three.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about Calvary Baptist.
Yeah,
it's on the right hand side of. Yeah, I know exactly where it
Main
is now.
Main Street there.
Forgot
so
about
maybe
them.
Can
sorry.
Get them involved too. So this is a lot of interesting things going on and hopeful things, and that we all want to find. Keep our ears. To our radio station. I just wanted, there's a thing I was supposed to read here about the radio station has just announced, oh, they're having a contest too. A mural contest open to all artists in the listening area. The mural will be painted on the concrete block wall facing the parking lot so people will find us more easily. And WCOM will supply volunteers to help paint and $100 in supplies. So all you artists out there, submissions will be accepted in digital form until the last day in September 2010 at WCOM at davidballin.com. And Ballin is with two L's. Okay, WCOM at davidballin.com. And there'll be a volunteer judging committee. We'll select the winner. So find out more about that. Go to David Bellin's website. And just to remind you, too, that we are having our WILP contest for a new name. And you can call me with any comments about the show also, Lori Hoyt, at 968-1888. Our guest today, we still have a few minutes, but I just wanted to get that in. Chris Moran from the Interfaith Council, Rainey Norwood from the Community House for the Interfaith Council, and Jay, a former homeless person who's now, thanks to the IFC and support and love and encouragement, is doing. Looks like very well.
I hope to be.
Yeah, on his way, on his path.
Thank you.
On his path, that just makes me feel good to hear about. Tana Hartman is co-host with me, and Dick Paddock is co-host and our intrepid engineer. Okay, we still have a few minutes left. I guess we won't play any music today, or did you want to, at the very end, give us a signal, have a minute or two, and take us out on a song. We wanted to, having an hour, we thought, instead of talking heads, but I like it so much when we have different voices coming in. So, Tana, you got some...
Just give the IFC website again.
Yes.
IFCweb.org.
IFCweb.org. www.ifcweb.org. It's very easy to find. On that web, we have a blog that has all of the information about this project, some crime reports that we put up that have been done independently that sort of refute some things that have been said in the community. Mm-hmm. We have a Twitter account, we have Facebook, we have 704 people on Facebook supporting Community House. We want to have 1,315. Which is our address by October 21st.
Okay, so what is your Facebook? How do you get on that?
You just go to the website. You'll see Facebook on
so
the left-hand side.
So give us the website again. It's www.ifcweb.org. IFCweb,
W-E-B. Yes.
Web.org.
.org. And you'd be amazed. The former chancellor is on Facebook. I know that... That it's not an easy thing for some people, but it's a great way to show support. And we're going to do the same thing for Food First very soon.
And what's Food First?
Food First will be the name of the operation in Carborough, where the kitchen and the pantry will be co-located.
Okay.
Food First, Peter Lee, who is a doctor and involved with the town of Carborough on a number of committees, sent me an email one day, and he said, "Remember, Chris, Food First." So that became the name.
That's a great name. And again, for our listeners, at the beginning of the show, Chris mentioned that 3,000 families need food support in this community and come to that little building there to get food. So that they trying to keep them from going off that last rung of the ladder into homelessness. And so many of our neighbors are struggling to keep abreast of that in these hard times. And these hard times are going to go on for a while. So I think it's time for all of us to kind of remember that we are neighbors and we all are valuable, and we all are have dignity, deserve dignity and respect, whatever. And I liked what you said earlier, Jay, about in every stratum of society, there's some good and bad from the top on down. So
absolutely.
You know, there's each group has some really good people and some really bad people, and it's not just in one group, yeah, which some people seem to think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Any last words you want to give us, Jay?
I just think one of the things that I'd like everyone to try, and it took for me to alter your perception of the homeless. Because whatever we face in life, more often than not, we do it with our families or do it alone. And whatever brings you to whatever situation it is, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, you're there and you have to deal with it at that particular point in time. And one of the things that was really difficult for me is to walk down Franklin, knowing that I was homeless, and seeing some of the expressions on people's faces, you know, not that I had a sign, homeless, but there was, I don't know, a gut feeling as the, you know, baby, you don't belong here. Mm-hmm. And that was in me, of course, that's in everyone who lacks whatever it is that a situation calls for. Yes, but the thing is, you know, there is a tomorrow, and as long as there is breath, you can change your situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't ask anyone to physically come in and unload $1 million. I could have used it. But, but you know, each day is a building process. Yeah. It's a slow one,
yeah.
You know, very time-consuming, but it is a building process where you're stronger than yesterday, but not as strong as you will be tomorrow.
Yeah.
And always keep that tomorrow brings hope.
Yeah.
Keep that hope alive.
And as Jay told us earlier, that when he was at his lowest point, it was the encouragement and services of the Interfaith Council.
There was no doubt, about
psychological,
it.
Psychological, food.
Medical. I had a stroke while I was in there. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. I think that would be a great show for us one day to talk about attitudes toward things like homelessness.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah.
Well, we've brought a little bit into this show, but that's what I was telling Chris when we made this appointment for today, that at some point I'd like to have even a lot more homeless people and telling their stories, how you got to be homeless and how are you surviving now, and you know what's helping you pull your step, your one foot ahead of the other,
exactly.
and maybe moving forward on the path that you talked about, Jay. Dick has brought us a little bit of music, so I want to say good night for what?
WCOM.
This is WCOM FM.
103.5
on your dial.
Oh, sorry, it's WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carver.
Oh my gosh,
let's get that right.
We gotta get it right. Okay, and Dick is gonna take us out with a little bit of music.
Yeah, some Raging Grannies.
Oh my mirror gaggle of grannies, urging you off of your fanny.